If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Hey guys, thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. This is part 2 of a 2-part episode. So if you haven't listened to part 1, go back and do that first. We'll be here when you get back. This is part 2 of 3 days at the lake. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. After the incident at the showers, when we heard footsteps and got out only to find our clothes had been gone through, I started to get worried. We didn't have anything for them to take. But what if the other group hadn't shown up when they did? If they'd gone through our pockets and were disappointed about what they'd found, what would they have done next? I found myself looking over my shoulder as we walked back to our campsite. Could someone be following us? I didn't see anything. My rational mind knew that it was probably some kid looking for weed or money, and they got scared off. That there wasn't any real danger. But I had trouble shaking that feeling. When we got back to the camp, all of our things were still just as we'd left them. Nothing was missing. Nothing had been moved. That eased my mind a bit. The cabin across the lake seemed to be calm too. There was still a car there, but the other one hadn't returned. We ate and watched the sunset. I'd been contemplating how to bring up what I wanted to ask him since the walk back from the showers. Sydney's friends missing across the lake. The first night, when I saw light pass by. Maybe on the water, maybe on land. And now this. I had a bad feeling, and I didn't want to stay the rest of the weekend. Finally, I gathered my thoughts, and I broke the news in a way that I'd hoped he'd be receptive to. And also, in a way that didn't make me sound like the biggest wimp ever. So, I hope this isn't too much of a letdown, but I think I want to go home. After everything that's happened to us, to Sid and her friends, I feel like it's not safe out here right now. Alex listened and looked out over the lake.
I get it. I know you had a different idea of how we'd spend a week at the lake.
No, it's not that. I feel like there's a bad person out here. What if that first night, someone was trying to get an idea for who was in the tent? They made some noise and shined a light, hoping to see who would come out to investigate, see how many people were there, whether we were armed. And since we didn't come out, maybe they didn't take the chance. But if it's the same person from the showers, then now they know it's just the two of us.
I mean, maybe, but it was probably just kids both times. Look, I mean, if you want to go back, of course we will. I just don't know that it's a good idea tonight. It's getting late and we could get turned around in the night.
I looked up at the sky. The sun was already below the horizon, and the pink and orange sky had already given way to darkness and stars to the east. He was right. If we left now, we had a 2-hour hike to our car. Plenty of opportunity to get lost in the woods, or to be exposed and alone on the trail.
We can go now if you want, or we could leave first thing in the morning.
No, you're right. We should stay tonight. But do you mind if we head out in the morning? He put his arm around me.
Of course not. I'm sorry, I didn't realize how much this was bothering you.
We sat like that for a while, and then we started to notice activity at the cabin across the lake.
What do you think happened to their friends? She said they wandered off into the woods for some privacy. Do you think someone could have found them out there and done something?
I don't know. The car is gone, and the signal is bad out here. I think they probably took the car and they're spending some quality time alone together. And maybe they did try to call or text and it just hasn't come through yet.
He had a point. It was a rational explanation. And I felt better having said it all out loud. Knowing that we'd be leaving in the morning, the weight on my mind lifted. Hopefully, we'd be able to enjoy this last night and we'd be able to keep it with us as a good memory. Even if we went with cabins and locking doors in the future. We watched the last light disappear to the west, and the night above us was full of stars. There was activity across the lake again. Everyone was coming out onto the porch. They were already tipsy. The party must have started inside. I turned to Alex.
Want to see what they're up to?
I jumped up and went to the telescope, still set up by the water. It took a minute to adjust the focus and locate them in the viewfinder. The first person I noticed was Sid's friend from the boat. He was shirtless, with swim trunks on, just like he had been earlier that day. He looked like he might go jump in the lake. There were two girls in bikini bottoms and tank tops, another guy in swim trunks, too. I guess they really were planning on a night swim. I didn't see Sid anywhere. I panned the telescope across the porch and then around the house. Alex walked up behind me.
What are they up to?
Nothing. I think they're going to go swimming, but I don't see Sydney anywhere.
As soon as I said that, Alex reacted to something outside the view of the telescope.
What's that?
I looked up from the lens and across the water. The beam of a flashlight had come on. It was moving away from the house. I hunched back over and tried to find it with the telescope, but a moving target isn't easy to keep up with. Alex took over. He was able to catch it and keep pace.
Yeah, it's her. She's going out to the woods. Maybe she's still trying to look for her friends. Based on the way she's moving, I think she's pretty annoyed with the others.
Yeah, they don't seem too concerned. I'd probably be annoyed too.
Alex panned the telescope back to the porch.
Nope, they don't seem concerned at all.
Alex lingered on the porch for a while.
Okay, now you're just staring at the girls over there.
I'm not interested in them. Not after last night. What got into you?
I don't know. I just wanted to try something new. Hey, why don't you come over here?
I didn't have to tell him twice. Just before we went back into the tent and zipped up the flap behind us, we heard the sound of our neighbors jumping into the lake. When we finished, we held each other for a long time. An hour and a half passed, and it was full dark. When we went back outside, our neighbors across the lake seemed to have taken the party inside. I wondered if Sydney had come back yet. I went to the telescope and looked over at the cabin. It was quieter, but I could see lights on in the windows and movement inside. I scanned the porch, and it looked a lot like the night before. There were empties and trash all over the place. Down in front of the porch, one of the guys seemed to have passed out in a camping chair. Off in the distance, over the water, I saw what might have been a flash of lightning on the horizon. A storm was coming.
Would you feel better if I stayed up for a while? You know, because of what you were talking about earlier?
He was talking about my anxiety, my worry that someone was out here with us. No, I don't want you to stay up.
Well, do you mind if I hang out here? Take in the dark sky one more time?
He pointed toward the telescope.
Yeah, sure. That sounds good.
When I got back to the tent, I sent Sid a text asking if everything was okay and if they'd found her friends. I noticed the messages we'd exchanged earlier in the day. We'd had enough signal to send and receive messages then. Maybe what Alex said about Sid not being able to reach them because of bad signals wasn't so reassuring after all. Alex shook me awake. It was jarring and disorienting.
What's going on? What time is it?
Wake up. I heard something.
What are you talking about?
There was a bright flash of light, followed a moment later by a roll of thunder. The storm that I'd seen before going to bed must be bearing down on us. I climbed out of the tent. There was a steady wind. I looked at my phone. It was almost 1 a.m.
I think I heard another scream.
He pointed across the water towards Sid's cabin.
Over there, or maybe that way, I'm not sure.
He indicated a couple of directions it could have come from. I looked at my phone again to see if Sid had texted back. She hadn't.
Have you tried the telescope?
He hadn't. We both started toward the telescope, somewhere between a fast walk and a jog. Another flash of lightning overhead. I felt exposed out here in the wild, with the storm coming in on us. There was nothing we could do about it now. I got there first and hunched over the eyepiece.
Can you see anything?
It took a second to find the focus, and then to find the cabin. But once I did, I was able to hold the telescope steady. Just then, I heard what could only be a scream. It was immediately swallowed up in a pounding thunder. We gave each other a look. Something was very wrong. I put my eye back against the lens, trying to get a good look at what was happening.
I'm going to call 911.
The lights were on, and I tried to find movement inside the cabin, but there was none. Then, I found the folding camp chairs on the ground below the porch. That same guy that was passed out earlier was still there. Why hadn't the storm woken him up? Especially that last peal of thunder. Then, I fully took in what I was seeing. Before, he'd clearly been asleep. But now, He was slouched down in an unnatural posture. He was covered in something dark from the neck down. My mind was screaming for any explanation other than the obvious. His throat had been cut.
I don't have a signal.
Use mine!
Yours doesn't either. It's got to be the storm.
I panned up to the porch, and that's when I saw something else. A handprint and a smear on the window. It was dark, too, like someone had tried to run against it with bloody hands.
Alex, I think they're all dead.
Just then, there was a flash of lightning. And in that moment of bright light, I saw something else. Out on the water to our left, there was a wall of rain approaching. Straight ahead and a little to the right, there was something on the water. A boat. The same boat that Sid and her friend had come over on earlier in the day. There was another flash, and that's when I saw her. She was struggling with something down in the boat, and there was a man. He was wearing some kind of rain jacket. His hood was up, and I couldn't see his face.
Please let me go. Please let me go.
I went back to the telescope, and I found them on the water. There was another flash.
Please, I won't tell anyone. I won't tell anyone.
Through the lens, I could see what she had been struggling with. There was something wrapped around her legs. A chain. And on the side of the boat, there was a concrete block.
What's happening?
I started to feel the first drops of rain. I was frozen in place. I couldn't move.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I won't scream again. I'm sorry. Please just let me go.
The man stepped to the edge of the boat and picked up the concrete block. He didn't react to her at all, but he stared at her while she begged for her life. Oh my God. He threw the concrete block into the lake.
No! No! No!
The rain was coming down harder. There was another flash of light. I saw the man in the raincoat turn toward us. The wall of water was on top of us now. Just before he disappeared behind a curtain of rain, he made a motion, and I knew what was about to happen. He was coming this way.
We need to go.
He didn't ask again. We were both running toward the tree line. The engine on the boat would put him on our side of the lake any moment. We couldn't see more than a few feet in front of us. We found the edge of the trees and the trail that led from our campsite to the main path. We ran as fast as we could in the mud. I hadn't put on shoes. I was slipping around. I don't know how long we'd been running when I realized something.
Our footprints! He can follow our footprints!
Alex looked at the trail. Deep prints, filling up with rainwater.
Shit, we need to get off the trail.
We only got a few feet off the trail before it was clear that I wouldn't be able to continue barefoot. Alex looked around, and then I could see an idea forming behind his eyes.
Here,
He pointed up.
Climb up! Climb up, and I'll lead him away. I'm the only one leaving Prince on the trail.
No! Stay with me! Don't leave!
Look, if our steps end here, he'll know where we are. If I keep going, he'll never know that you're here.
I nodded, tears streaming down my face as he boosted me up into a tree. The lowest branch was high overhead. I wouldn't have been able to get up without help. It wouldn't be an obvious climbing tree. Alex told me he loved me and that he'd come back and find me. And I watched him dash away into the gray rain, into the night. A minute or two after Alex ran off, I watched with terror as the man in the raincoat passed underneath my tree. He was, in fact, following our footprints. I didn't move. I tried not to breathe, even though the rain would have drowned out the sound. Sometime overnight, the rain stopped. I stayed in my tree, and I listened for any sounds of a struggle, for any sound of movement. But the forest was quiet. I didn't know what I should do. I wanted to go looking for Alex. But what if I ran into him instead? Alex had told me he'd come back and find me. I should wait. And that's what I did. At some point, the sounds of the forest began to come back. I heard birds chirping, and then I heard the rustling of squirrels and wildlife. There was a soft pink light in the eastern sky. It was almost morning. But even still, I stayed in my tree. When the light began to turn orange and fill the whole sky, I heard something. It was footsteps. It must have been Alex. He was coming back for me. I almost called out so that he could find me. When I saw it, it was a black hood. It was the raincoat, the one I'd seen on the boat with Sydney. I tensed up, and I tried to slow my breathing. I didn't want to make a sound. I watched him following his own footsteps and Alex's in reverse. He was making his way back to the water, back the way he'd come. It felt like time slowed down as he passed underneath me. But he did eventually pass, and he kept moving. I'd managed to not be seen. I allowed myself to breathe again when he was out of my sight. Then, in the distance, I heard the sound of the boat motor rumbling to life. And then I heard it fade as it made its way back across the water. I waited longer. I don't know for how long. But finally, I climbed down to the lowest branch. I dangled, and then I dropped the remaining few feet, my bare feet stinging against the roots and branches underneath. I ran as fast as I could to the main trail, and almost right away, I ran into some day hikers who could tell that something was very, very wrong. They escorted me back to the parking lot, where I found the confirmation desk where we'd signed in on our first day of the camping trip. I picked up the courtesy phone, and I asked the operator to send help. I was covered in mud. I was scraped and bleeding, but it all blended in together. I couldn't stop crying. The parking lot was full of cars, couples and families and groups of friends arriving for the day. I was surrounded by people. I was finally safe. They never found the man in the raincoat, but they found what he'd done. The carnage on the other side of the lake was unthinkable. They'd found the guy who'd been passed out on the camping chair first. Just like I'd thought, his throat had been cut, probably while he slept. He would have been the luckiest of them. Inside, another one of the guys was found just below the window where I'd seen that bloody handprint. Two others were found in a closet. They'd been hiding there together. They'd known what was coming. And Sid. I pointed out about where she'd been when it happened, and they brought her to the surface later that first day. It was 2 weeks later, and a few miles away, when they found that second car and the couple who'd gone missing the first night Sid and her friends were at the cabin. They were at the end of an old access road that hadn't been used in years. Someone would have had to have been really familiar with the area to know that it was back there. Someone local. They never found Alex. I stayed close in case Alex turned up. I hoped that somehow he would come walking out of those woods, that he'd gotten turned around or lost, and that any minute he'd finally find his way back. But that hope faded with every passing day. Even so, I stayed at a hotel in the nearest town so that if he was going to turn up, I would be one of the first faces he saw. That reunion never happened. I contacted my new employer. They'd heard about what happened. Everyone had heard about it. But they hadn't known that I'd been there. They were patient and understanding with me when I asked if we could push my starting day back a little bit, to give me some time to get my head straight. They waited for a little while, but eventually, they had to move on. As for me, I'm not sure I'll ever be able to move on. It's been years since that summer, and I can't bring myself to go back to the lake and the forest around it. But I still search online for missing people over there. They find bodies in that forest from time to time, and people still go missing. They're usually classified as hiking accidents, and I'm sure some of them are. But after that week, I'm not so sure that some of them aren't something else. Something more sinister. I keep my eyes open, even all this time later, for any sign of Alex. But I don't know if his body will ever turn up. I've been doing some other research too. I've been looking up old state park employees, the kind that would have been around when that old service road was in use, the one where they found the missing couple and the missing car. People old enough to remember when it would have been used. Maybe they'd used it themselves, but also people still in good enough shape to commit a massacre like that. It's not just old state park employees. Other people familiar with the place. Outdoorsy people who might have stumbled across it. I've scoured the registration forms for fishing licenses, for hunting licenses. Someone near Cave Run Lake is holding on to a secret. Someone over there can't be accounted for that night. I've looked into enough people that I'm certain I've already come across their name. I just haven't narrowed it down yet. The cops may have stopped looking, but I haven't. I haven't been able to bring myself to go back. But when I figure out who it was, I may need to take one more trip to the lake. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts, especially if you're listening on Spotify. Ratings and reviews over there would really help us out. This has been part 2 of 3 Days at the Lake, written by Ian Epperson and Brooke Jeanette, narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. Alex was Mason Amadeus. Sydney was Kayla Temshev. Music composed by Kayla Ritchie. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Bridget Freeman. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Michael Vasquez, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Delta Tango, Chantel Payne, Nick, Stephanie Klinger, Jake R., Abigail Perez, and Emily Toll. Thank you guys so much for your support. Check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links to all that in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. You can find that in the show notes too. Bridget Freeman is lurking in the forest. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.